The United States of America has greatly prospered because of God's blessings and the fact that the settlers and the founders of this nation eschewed socialism and instead embraced private property and free enterprise. Rabbi Daniel Lappin writes, "Why is Switzerland a nicer place to live than Somalia? In exchange for power and prestige, socialistic politicians promise gullible voters all the advantages of prosperity and progress with none of the costs. Socialism is a more dangerous and virulent virus than COVID was. Socialism, oops, sorry, progressivism, seduces low-character people by offering them a moral framework that legitimizes their living off the work of other people. Take an adult look at the Bible. Socialism sanctimoniously sanitizes theft." Again, so writes Rabbi Daniel Lappin. He's the president of the American Alliance of Jews and Christians, and he joins us now to discuss our lurch towards socialism. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and this is Vocal Point. Rabbi, we welcome you back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you every time, Jerry. Thanks for thinking of me.
Sure. Well, in the Jamestown settlement and then also in Plymouth, the people who funded these exploits or, you know, the colonies, they stipulated that everybody would have to share no matter how hard they worked. And it didn't work. And so very quickly, they abandoned it after trying socialism. And then America's gone on to become kind of like the seat of capitalism, of free enterprise and so forth. But now, today, capitalism has a, you know, bad branding. You know, socialism has the better branding. What's going on?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. Unfortunately, yes, socialism is marketed as a caring, compassionate way of living, way of governing, way of running a society, in which the dealing with the economic aspect is just a small part. But but capitalism, in its very word, suggests that all it's concerned about is money. And the fact is that the human beings have a deep desire to validate for themselves that they are more than animals. And I mean, there are all kinds of indications of this. You know, I don't know if you know any guys who practice extreme sports, Jerry, but I do, and I'm always happy to hear a phone call from them once they're back from paragliding or from base jumping or from mountain climbing. And, you know, you think about it, there's not a single animal on the face of the planet that voluntarily puts itself in physical danger for kicks or for adrenaline or for anything else. We are the only creatures that put ourselves in peril, physical peril, which just goes to show that we human beings are unique among all creatures on the planet in that there is something more important to us than physical survival. And that's why the phrase I'm sick of hearing every time somebody in a flying suit, and I hope you don't even know what that is, Jerry, every time somebody in a flying suit crashes into a cliff at 160 miles an hour and dies, the obituary always starts the same way. He died doing what he loved. Like, oh, great. Well, then that makes sense. That's a good way to go. You know, we are unique. We are creatures for whom something is more important than mere physical survival. And the trouble with capitalism as, you know, in terms of how it's marketed, if I may use the phrase, is that it sounds as if it's only about how money is distributed. Now, we also have a complete horrible misunderstanding of money. Jerry, I speak now for about between 20 and 30 churches a year throughout the world. And it's nearly always about money is what I speak about and what God's plan was for human economic interaction. But I'll tell you this. I'd say about a good quarter to a third of the churches I go to, I can tell when I drive into the parking lot, I already know what's going on because I can see grass growing through the cracks in the parking lot. And I see a light out, you know, bulb not replaced, and I see the roof looking like it could use some repair, and I see the pastor's wife looking stressed, and I guess it's because bills that haven't been paid. And I know that I'm at a church that preaches the idea that poverty equals virtue, and that somehow money is part of the work of the devil, that money is not a positive or a good thing. And that distresses me deeply, and I do everything in my power to show that that is not part of God's message. Now, I'm dismayed by prosperity gospel ideas. You just pray to God for a Ferrari. I mean, that's absurd and stupid, and that's not part of what the Bible teaches at all. But the Bible does say, look, if you will take care of the most profound needs of God's other children, you will never be short. And that is really, that should be the clarion call of capitalism. All you've got to do is care for God's other children, and you'll never be short of anything.
Well, I know that one of the things Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, he talked about, you know, the pagans, they just want to get, you know, all they care about is eating and, you know, where will they get clothes to wear and so forth. But he said, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things that you need shall be added unto you. And he also said, don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And by the way, I try and read the Proverbs every single day. And so today we're recording this on the 28th of the month. So today I read Proverbs 28. And you can do that, you know, month after month. And I've been doing it by God's grace for a couple of years.
Right.
Yeah, it's neat.
Yeah, no, exactly. And look, I mean, the trouble is that it's all too easy for people, particularly people who have become distant from God and close to a secular worldview, it's very easy for them to jump to the conclusion that equality is an ultimate value. And that really is a fundamental doctrine of socialism, the promise of equality. Of course, it doesn't mean everybody equally wealthy. It means everyone equally miserable, but that's just me. The reality is that people are easily seduced to that. And even good folks like the pilgrims who arrived. And what I ask you to do, Jerry, is do you remember an old show, which, by the way, used to play in prime time? It wasn't a kid's show. It used to play in prime time, called Gilligan's Island. Does that ring a bell?
Oh, yeah. I've seen the reruns. Yes. I mean, yeah, of course.
All right. So you see, here's what I want to show is that this is not simple, and that socialists are not stupid, and people who lean towards socialism aren't stupid. They're just wrong. And what I ask you to do is imagine that you are a teacher in charge of, shall we say, 30, 17 or 18 year old 12th grade high school boys, and you're on a trip and you get wrecked on a desert island, and you happen to know it's going to be 2 years before the Coast Guard can rescue you. You know, stipulating all of that. What are you going to do now? Well, you're responsible, and you know that in 2 years' time, when the Coast Guard come by, they're going to expect all those boys to be alive and well and healthy. And if they're not, then you will have your career ruined. So you've got to do everything you can to make sure that everybody makes it for the next 2 years. So your first problem is shelter. You know, you've got to make sure there's somewhere to protect yourselves. You've got to get a fire going. And then you've got to make sure you've got a supply of food and water. And, you know, you're going to send out a team of boys to search for a spring or a river or a brook. You'll send out a team of boys to go to the lagoon to see if they can catch fish. You'll send out another team to look for fruits and vegetables. You might send out another team to see if there are any wild hogs on the island that you can catch and kill. But you're going to divide your boys into teams to go along and secure the necessities of life. What are you going to do, you know, a few days down the road when they start grumbling, you know, and they're going to tell you there's one of the boys doesn't work. He just sits as soon as they're out of sight of you. He doesn't do anything. You very soon have a question of does everyone eat the same, or do people who don't work, do they not get the same food? That's a big question you got to answer. And we can even make the problem more complex in saying you've got 30 boys and 30 girls. And now what are you going to do about the inevitable tensions? And what happens to pregnant girls? How do they eat? Who feeds them? On whose work do they survive? And you're going to feel there's a very strong tendency for you to make sure that everyone gets equal. And that would make an easier life for you, because who can complain if everyone's eating the same? But the people who complain are the people who don't produce equally. There are going to be some people who produce much more. And so in miniature, the entire problem is laid out in the school trip dilemma, the Gilligan's Island dilemma. You know, what do you do with the fact that some people produce more than other people? You've either got to decide that equality of outcome is indeed the moral goal, or you have to say, no, everybody eats what they produce, but there's also an obligation to take care of those who have less.
You know,
and
yeah,
if the taking care is not run bureaucratically by government, but it's each person, it would be very different. You know, if someone who lives down the block on welfare had to come every week to knock on my door to ask me for the money, believe me, you'd have a lot less abuse of America's welfare system, because I would take an interest in their life and I would do everything in my power to help them get back on their feet and get a job so they stop needing welfare. But the governmental system of welfare ensures perpetuity, because it creates a dependent class along with a vast bureaucracy of well-paid bureaucrats to run the whole darn thing. So socialism is very appealing. There's no question about it. And one needs a biblical worldview to be able to rise above the basic seduction of socialism.
And going back to that comment where you were talking about all these people on welfare and you have this dependent class, and then the people who have perpetual jobs because they run the welfare system, they also then have a strong voter base out of that.
Oh, absolutely. Perpetuates the power structure of the country, no question.
Okay, you say socialism sanctimoniously sanitizes theft. We have about 2 minutes left. Comment on that phrase.
Yeah, as I was saying, if my neighbor on welfare had to come once a week to ask me for money, and he had to say to me, listen, you know, your kids are going to go without a bicycle for their birthday next week because I need food for my family, that would be a very different situation as opposed to what currently exists, which is the sense of an entitlement, which is something completely different. So, yes, we would do everything in our power to try and move away from that. But what socialism does is, and you heard a little bit of it from President Obama a number of years ago when he said to a businessman, you didn't make that. The idea is you don't have a right to what you produce. Everything belongs to the state. And so what socialism does, when I become a socialist, first of all, I'm put at war with many people in society, the people who actually work and produce. They're now the enemy, and I've got to get what is theirs. So we saw with the horrible riots and looting and burning during the summer of 2020, there's an entire part of America, white and black, an entire subgroup of America that believes that they have a right to that which other people have built and created. And that is the tragedy of socialism. It sanitizes theft. It legitimizes theft. In other words, people do not believe that they are living on the goodness and generosity of their fellow citizens. No, they deserve everything and more that their fellow citizens create.
All right. Rabbi Daniel Lappin, rabbidaniellappin.com for more information. Thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Bye, Jerry.